All right. We are live. Welcome another edition of Pursuing Bitcoin Jam. PBJ, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, hey.
Steven DK coming in on a foggy afternoon in San Francisco. Grateful we got a little bit of cooler weather.
Did the fog just enter?
Fog just entered yesterday. It was hot AF, so I'm happy that it's cooling down. So, and speaking of cooling down, Steve and DK were talking to me about a little bit of running this morning, which is somewhat interesting. But, you know, I know we often get people in the chat asking, hey, we wish you guys would discuss basketball more. sadly, there's
specifically as Iowa State was.
Like exactly. There's that one guy who's like, I love Bitcoin and Iowa State. I found my number one podcast.
Low tap podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's a high signal.
What are we going to talk about? Knicks?
No. Well, I mean, the basketball, that's interesting. But honestly, I have to say, how stoked are you guys right now for the World Cup?
Yeah. Mexico got things kicked off yesterday.
That's right, man. Mexico came out, took care of business in Estadio Azteca. They took
South Korea did too.
Yeah.
Well, I think isn't a match starting right now.
There's a match starting now, and then tonight is U.S. and Paraguay. There's matches here in the Bay Area. It's getting a little crazy. Like, Anjali went yesterday to, I guess, yeah, when I was here at the office to like the watch party, and it's just crowded with people. But I have to say, like, I'm pretty stoked. I'm also seeing some people discussing doing some betting around the World Cup, which I'm not participating in. But if you're listening to this and you have an interest in making an app, it'd be cool to have a Bitcoin World Cup betting app. It's not too late. You know, just got started. So,
I mean, someone could vibe code it during our show.
During our show, yeah. So if you're listening to this, you got people watching from all over the world. But it's cool because one thing I really like about the World Cup, I was never super into soccer, but Anjali was super into it. So over time, I've gotten more into it. Is it feels like the one kind of moment where like the world really does come together, except for the US, but the US is getting there slowly. But it's just really cool to see, I don't know, all the countries of the world, like humanity kind of unite around something. So I think it's a positive thing.
Oh, I totally agree.
I'm stoked.
I've been part, yeah.
You went South Africa, right?
Let's see, 2004, I was in Athens.
Mm.
And just by chance,
yeah.
Greece won the Euro Cup that year. They had never won a match before.
Yeah.
They'd never won a match in the Euro Cup.
Yeah.
And they won the entire Euro Cup.
Wow.
So it was wild being in Greece during that time.
Yeah.
2006, I was living in China.
Oh, wow.
And the World Cup was in Germany.
Oh.
So the watch parties were from midnight to 6 a.m. And I didn't have a job at the time. So I went. No. But like,
sounds fun.
It was like packed. And then all the Chinese people would go from the bar at 6 a.m. straight to work.
So the Chinese like the World Cup.
Like, love the World Cup.
Really? Because like, do they even, is their soccer team
huge expats and crowd and huge Chinese.
Because like, they didn't even qualify for the World Cup, no?
And, yeah, they love it though.
You know, weird.
I mean, they also love the NBA too, right? I mean, yeah, well, even then in 2006, like AI jerseys were the number one selling.
Well, of course they are.
Jersey was
it. Allen Iverson's greatest player ever.
So. Yeah. And then in 2010, I went to South Africa.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So
I'm sad I missed the Brazil one too. Like that sounded like epic. But yeah. Anyways, the Bay Area is hosting is probably not as much fun as those places. But next time is going to be Spain and Portugal. Sounds pretty cool to me.
Yeah, excited. Excited for the World Cup.
Sweet.
You guys may have thought I've been vibe coding this whole time because I've not been participating in your World Cup discussion, but I've actually been getting my Jam Chat set up.
Oh,
have your Jam Chat set up?
And what's that?
Well, Jam Chat.
Really skillful transition, DK.
Jamchat.fun. Go visit the website. It's a new tool that was, oftentimes we like riff off and spout our ideas randomly on air. And in some cases, like this case, Matt Belez picked up and decided, oh, actually, I'm going to do that. I'm going to expand the stuff I'm already doing and do that. So last night, he put together this thing called Jamchat.fun. And it's like a live stream accompaniment to this show that makes this show like AI-ified. So the core thing is when we say things, we can actually invoke all of our speech gets translated to text. We get to invoke an LLM
What's the URL again? Thanks, AnswerBot.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, jamshot.fun. There it is.
Oh, it's actually integrated with StreamYard, is it? Oh, no, that was Alex. Okay, cool.
And also, my experiment did not work here. So let's try it again. What is the URL that DK mentioned? Thanks, AnswerBot.
Don't detect your answer bot.
I don't. Oh.
Oh.
Detect your
so it did work.
Bot.
So yeah. So let's describe. First of all, we talked about this feature on last show.
That's right.
And
Matt
super
said
cool,
he was going to drop something.
And it's super cool that Matt dropped something.
Yeah.
So we want our call to action for live audiences. Don't use X or YouTube to chat like you normally do. Instead, go to jamchat.fun.
Yeah.
We can see it here in the studio. And I guess, DK, can you see it or no?
I've got JamChat up on my phone right now. That's why I was getting
it. And you can see our messages. Or
I
the
see,
messages.
Oh, nice.
I That's see nice some messages, yeah. I see what is the URL DK mentioned, and it says answer DK mentioned jamchat.fun. So I think,
yeah,
I think it
so
did work.
It worked.
Yeah.
Who just gave us confetti?
So here.
Was that you, JamChat bot?
Yeah, I don't know.
Satbot, are you in there?
Yeah, how does the confetti, when does the confetti fly? Thanks, AnswerBot. So just so Max understands experience here and the audience understands yeah. experience, just like every other show, we can have a live audience. They can text chat us. We see it. We can respond if we want. Others see it as well. But we've added it. It's AI native now. Mm. So if for the hosts.
Okay. So for context, like we can ask questions.
Yep. And we just speak naturally. And then once we have a question that we want AI to go do something, we say, thanks, AnswerBot.
Okay.
Like, so who won the World Cup in 2004? Thanks, AnswerBot.
Do I have to say something like add AnswerBot or just AnswerBot? I'll
no,
try.
There's no starting. There's no starting.
There's it's no starting. End. You just ask your question
and
then
find
okay.
the
you, then you thank
okay.
it.
What are the current odds for which are the top three teams by odds to win the World Cup this year, AnswerBot? Who has the highest odds, the top three teams who have the highest odds of winning the World Cup, AnswerBot?
You thanks, AnswerBot.
Thanks, what? AnswerBot. Which teams have the highest odds of winning the World Cup? Thanks, AnswerBot.
Okay, got it, yeah.
And so it can track anywhere on the web. So for example, it could access something like, and like if I wanted to say, do Polymarket, let's see.
Spain, France, and England.
Oh, really? I saw France had the highest odds, of course. That's changed. So Spain is around 410 plus 410 plus 500. Yeah, France, similar. England, a little bit. Yeah, they're all in the same range. Interesting.
This is great, though.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the future of live stream. Like every live stream has to have this.
I 100% agree. And we're probably the first to do it. So thank you again, Matt Velez.
Thanks,
and,
Matt.
Let's do this. Let's do this every week. So we need to steer our audience to using jamchat.fun, and we can look at other integrations as well. One improvement would be if we can increase the font size slightly. It's not critical for today's show. But, oh, there we go.
Can you generate a lightning invoice? Thanks, Jambot. Jambot?
AnswerBot.
AnswerBot. Can you generate a lightning invoice so people can pay Bitcoin? Thanks, AnswerBot. Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
It's thinking, so it might be able to do this. If it can't do it now, eventually, I assume it will.
Well, I don't think we mentioned another feature that Matt's already added, which is anyone in the audience, if they want to like give a tip for an answer, they can tip Bitcoin.
How do we do that?
Well, you.
So just to think through the mechanics of how it works is Matt is paying for these answers to happen, right? He does the transcription. If it ends in a thanks AnswerBot, he submits that to an LLM. He pays for that, and then it comes back and it tells, you know, it allows the users to contribute after the fact.
Okay.
So you could pay for something that, you know, kind of as a thanks for,
that's
for
cool.
doing the LLM.
So he says each answer already has a button. So Alex, can you click and see if there's a button where we can do a payment on any of the answers?
I used the button last night. I don't see the button now.
Yeah.
I see you.
Oh, this is
host and host mode doesn't have it.
So if anyone's watching live and can demonstrate, that would be super
I think
cool.
Someone already did. If we go scroll up, Alex. I think, yeah.
Yep.
Ah, okay, that's sick. And where is this going to? Is this like, does the agent have its own wallet or is this like Matt's wallet?
I think
or?
It goes to Matt. Like DK said, I mean, he's paying for the
Matt's
inference.
Pretty funding it, right?
Okay. That's
but
sick.
I mean, you know, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah, of course, there'll be new features. Like, yeah, we'll be able.
I mean,
cool
it already The point is jamchat.fun already has Lightning QR codes and integrations in it to do this feature. So like to do the thing that you suggested should be...
Create a Lightning invoice that would pay Max at getalbi.com. Thanks, AnswerBot.
Yeah, just had BTC Moon Guy just joined in a regular chat. In case you just joined in and missed our original call to action, if you'd like to check out jamchat.fun, jamchat.fun, it's a new app we're trying out where you can still message us, chat with the community, but we've made it AI native.
And what would be super cool, so I'm already seeing people are doing emojis on top of each of the different chats. So what would be cool is in Stack News or, whatever, in Nostr feeds, I'm assuming next we'll be able to zap these. And if you can log in with Nostr, then you can bring the social graph with you and be able to rank by, okay, I want to see only all of the posts historically that DK has ever zapped in all of our chats. Super cool.
Yeah. And I can imagine, once this becomes popular, stuff will scroll off the screen quickly. So we'll need to figure out how to manage that too. That's also where Bitcoin tips, emojis, engagement should help filter comments to the top.
Yeah.
And then also the AI answer window, answer bot or whatever. We need some way to manage that too, because some of these answers are taking up 2/3 of the vertical space.
Yeah, super cool. And I mean, I think I mentioned this last week, but a feature that I would love to see is if we could create mini games and polls on the fly. So if we could do stuff like, hey, here are the four teams we think are to win the World Cup. Hey, you, AnswerBot, create a, a place for people to vote in real time, which with their sats, which of these teams is going to win? We could do mini prediction markets on the fly.
So Matt, he's now got a feature request. Jamchat.fun should be a full vibe coding platform.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very simple.
I mean, I've already heard numerous anecdotes of people recently in a meeting, their vibe coding, and not in parallel to the meeting, but part of the meeting.
Yeah.
The feedback they're getting, they're literally speaking to their agent to vibe code.
Well, and to be clear, I mean, you say that tongue in cheek, DK, but we already had that with Satbot back in the day. It wasn't this is some software huge lift. Satbot would create mini polls for us on demand in the chat, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, honestly, what would be really cool then is if you could hook up Jamchat and to external bots. So if we could have Satbot from NDK join, then Satbot could generate the polls for us right now. In fact, is that possible? Could Satbot join Jamchat?
I mean, the way it's coded is there's just one agent, but I mean, anything's possible.
That would be sick, because now we start looking at something like a real Moltbook. When everyone was losing their minds, the agents are on there. So that would be sick, is if we could let Nick bring his bot in, Albie could bring their bot in, that'd be cool.
Well, that's sounding more like the Buzz experience to me.
I love it.
Yeah, nice transition.
Yeah, should we talk about that, Steve? Because I know today you guys are both showing your master transition class. So tell us what is Buzz?
Well, and you want to talk about Nostr clients in general, right? Yeah, so we'll start with this one.
Okay.
You show Max any new piece of software and he's like, is it powered by Nostr? I don't care what the software does, but it better be powered by Nostr.
It better be. And I wore my Nostr shirt today because that's how excited I am.
And he doesn't really like Jamchat because it's not powered by Nostr.
I think Jamchat is dope.
I think Matt, you just need to say it's powered by Nostr, even if it's not powered by Nostr.
You'll have one more.
We only care about the infrastructure, the end result.
It's the marketing. It's not the technical architecture. It's the marketing.
Yeah, and I need to be able to tap my wand to pay for it too.
Dude, the wand. I know, people the wand love is amazing. People love the wand. I've been using it to pay. Yeah. Kids love the wand.
Yep.
Kids now, kids love the wand, and then also. The cashier on the other end of the sale right now it's the novelty factor.
Of course.
But they love it. Everyone loves it.
So I want to just pause there for a minute, because I have to say, and this is something I realize, I have a lot of my own thoughts about how the internet should work and the world should work, but I realize I'm not the average person by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think any of us are. After the show, the biggest comment Anjali had to me after watching our show last week was, oh my God, the wand is amazing. I want one. So, live request. We can figure out how to get a wand. She wants to try this. But she told me actually her theory, which I think is kind of funny. I don't know if this is whatever. we're all in polite company here. This is a Bitcoin show. That basically, like, her theory is like just basically the economy is just driven by like women shopping, just like buying random stuff, clothes or whatever. And it's hard for us as like guys to appreciate that. But like, yeah, that's like what a lot of the economy is, just women wanting to buy makeup and clothes and this and that. And Cash App seems to have like really figured out how to appeal to women. So yeah, I was wrong.
Well, also, just if you make, I mean, it makes paying fun,
exactly.
Right? So that's a huge emotional shift from like not wanting to like making it fun. But yeah. Okay, Buzz. Master.
Buzz.
So this is it's a new project from Block. It was briefly called Sprout. Mm-hmm. So for the few people in the world that have heard of Sprout, it's now called Buzz. It's an open source project, so it's available on GitHub today.
Oh, it's live.
Yeah, I mean, there has not been a lot of fanfare.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah.
I think that's coming soon. But we're talking about it now.
Yeah. Okay. This is the unofficial official launch.
This is where you get your alpha.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is it? It's a communication tool. Think like Discord, Slack type of user experience. There's channels, you can DM people, but it's AI native. Mm-hmm. So it's been designed from scratch to be AI native.
Sounds provocative.
And it supports multiple agents. That's why I brought it up. I mean, what you're describing and being able to plug in another agent here and having talk to each other, whatever, that's just native to Buzz.
It's cool.
And you can run your own, you can add your own agents. Mm-hmm. You can have any model you want supporting them. You can name them. Mm. You can also give them, specific personas.
Cool.
As well. So that they can take on different roles. Mm-hmm. And then you can share those agents with other people. So you can have a channel that has multiple humans and multiple agents. Mm-hmm. So like the experience we've had with OriBot and SatBot and things like that, which is a, multiple humans, one agent.
Right.
Just imagine that, taking that to the next level, multiple humans, multiple agents.
Yeah, it's cool.
And you can have any kind of interaction you want there where the agents are just working by themselves and you can observe it or you can interact with them as well.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about, one, I guess, how it works, and I'm curious about the impacts, but like how it works. So you have the ability to spin up agents and you can choose different models. I'm assuming, I'm curious, like who does the hosting and how does it work if you want to bring in, like if Nick wanted to bring in SatBot, what's like the standard or like, how does that plugin actually work?
Yeah. ACP is the standard. Mm-hmm. And so you can use, we're using like Claude Code, Codex, Soup, which both support ACP. So in those situations, the model's running in the cloud, mm-hmm. but your agent is running on your laptop.
Cool.
I have like Gemma 4 running on, that model on my laptop, and I'm using Goose as the agent.
Nice.
And it also supports ACP. Cool. So it plugs into Buzz.
And what is ACP? I don't know if we've talked about that on the show.
Yeah. It's an emerging standard. Mm-hmm. Not yet part of like the AIF or Linux Foundation, but maybe in the future.
Okay.
But it's being fairly broadly adopted.
Agent communication protocol?
Yeah. And it's a standard interface between agent harnesses and models.
Okay. And we don't have to go into all the details, but like high level, what is it? Is it like just JSON or like what is the protocol?
It is JSON. Yep. Okay.
Interesting.
So this is, it's an open, it's an open source project. I think there'll be a lot more like official information from Block soon on it. But what's interesting for us to talk about right now is that DK, myself, and Matt Belez have been given a sneak peek and been able to use it the past several weeks.
Right.
And because we would like to use it in more of our open source communities, right? Yeah. Like I'm in 30 or more Discords, because mm-hmm. that's become a fairly popular communication tool for open source Bitcoin projects. And I'd say begrudgingly so. I wasn't quite a few Slacks.
I quit Discord and Slack.
Well, so Slack's horrible for open source because they don't have a business model that accommodates open source. Mm-hmm. So to get history, you have to pay. Mm-hmm. And in open source, you can just, because you open source, you want to have communities where it's permissionless. Anyone can join. Well, if you just have like anyone can join, the bills can literally run into the six figures. Who's going to pay for that? So it just does not work. Slack does not work for open source. So that's why there is a transition to Discord. And you said you quit it, but well, then you can't participate in these 30 Bitcoin communities that I'm participating in, right? Yeah. So that...
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well...
I know. It's the challenge, right?
I mean,
the modern life.
But not everyone can... If everyone says that, then how are we going to develop LDK, BDK?
Well, I think we have
Stratum
to find
V2,
a way...
Sediment.
I think we have to find
every
a way...
Every project needs a communication tool, right?
Totally. No, I get that. And I think this is, and maybe Sprout or Buzz is the answer, but like, to me, it's very obvious, like we're all just drowning in information. And so the only way to surface out of that is to use AI. Like the point that we were already spam pre-AI and the AI makes it go 100,000x, like you need AI to like mediate the other AI. So if this is what that is, I'm stoked.
But man, Max is built on Noster.
Wait a second. No, but Steve had told me, I think that it uses Blue Sky Identity. Is that right?
No.
Right? No, but it was Blue Sky DNS or whatever. Look,
it is built on Noster.
Noster, good.
Which is pretty cool.
Imagine like Discord like functionality, but built on Noster, right? Like that in itself.
I mean, I honestly think this is like the most compelling application I've seen. I mean, BitChat, I think, is a pretty compelling Noster application as well.
Yeah.
Just because it's largely hidden.
Yeah.
Like as a user, you're using this product. It's not like, oh, I'm using a Noster app.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like what we talked a lot about with Bitcoin. Like everyone's like, oh, I created a new Bitcoin app. It's not, no, create just an app that people like to use. And by the way, it actually uses Bitcoin.
Love it.
And same here. Like you could be using Buzz and you don't even, the only reason you kind of know it's a little different is like when you onboard, your identity, you know, is a Noster key pair, and you can bring your own, or you can have it created for you. And if you have it created for you, even then, you don't really have to know or care about Noster. It creates identity for you, much like BitChat.
Where is it stored? Like, so let's say I'm a total noob. I don't know anything about Noster.
Your file system.
And do I register just like with a normal email, and then a private key is generated and stored on device?
I don't think it requires email, right? Because it's a Noster ID. Okay. Or, I mean, it's a private key.
How do I think I'm logging in if I'm a noob? I don't even know what a private key is.
You don't.
I think you click like a create account button or something. You have like one option to add an NSEC if you know what you're doing, but otherwise just create an account or whatever. And then they don't really talk to you about the NSEC.
Interesting. So it just like they assume that like when you come back to that website, it'll just like automatically.
It's an app. Yeah, it's like a Mac OS.
So currently, however, it's a native app.
Yeah.
It's super simple onboarding. Yeah. You just click, it creates it for you. You don't have to really care about it. You're not backing it up. You're not restoring it. But we have had a few instances where I think DK like lost his or something, or I don't know. I've used a different binary from Matt, and we've needed our NSEC. And so it is stored in the file system and you can go grab it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's an area of improvement, like backups, restoration, et cetera. Okay, but actually, despite it not being like super advanced right now in that respect, we haven't really had pain points there. And then the other Noster integration is the use of Noster relays.
Yep.
And so it's using Noster relays. There are some extensions that are needed for this application.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the vision there is like if this becomes popular, beyond block, then it would be great to standardize those so that there's more Noster relays that support Buzz.
What do they need to support Buzz? Is it not just like traditional type one events or like?
I think I actually haven't studied the event, so I can't speak specifically to it, but I think it's around, you know, agents and shared agents and things like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cool. Do you know offhand, DK, any more details there? Or?
Any more details around with that message?
Noster extensions.
Oh, I don't know the details on how it's used Noster.
We'll cover it.
Getting a little deep
he wants to know about Noster, right?
So, yeah.
And then actually I have a few more. So we don't know all the details of the messaging extensions, but what's I find very interesting about this, because I still haven't seen any interest from Silicon Valley or tech companies on Noster, but except Block is a tech company.
Yeah.
They did not add Noster because like Jack told them to. They used it because it's actually a really interesting practical choice. And the way that they're using right now inside of Block is they're using a database.
Yeah.
They're using like Postgres or something, but they use Noster as the messaging layer between that. So it just gives you flexibility. Mm-hmm. So if you're a company and you're using this completely internally and private to your company, use a database.
Yeah.
If you're an open source community and you don't want, or you know, you're in a position where there you don't want a centralized server, well then like multiple community members can run Nostr relays. And then they're stored on those.
And you can obviously have permissions. Like you could have like your own private Nostr relay that, you know, only Block employees can access. And you can share some things there and you can share other things with like the LDK relay, which other people can access or whatever.
So it just seems like a very pragmatic
abstraction. And I think, so, I mean, I have a lot I want to say on this. One way that I would kind of categorize, I agree with you and I love watching things like Bitcoin, the nerd tech and Nostr fade to the background. And one way that I think about this is, you know, Matt put out a really nice piece a couple of weeks ago on Bitcoin for AI agents as money. And a line that he put in there, I think I'd heard it before as well, but it's really stuck with me. The one thing that really stuck with me from that article very heavily is Bitcoin is open source money. Just like forget all the technical crap. It's like it's open source money. And I think that instead of pitching Nostr, it's like, oh, it's this cool protocol, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, Nostr to me is just open source identity. And this is like a blog post. If you go to my, you know, website, hivemind.vc, I wrote this a couple of years ago. I'm like, Nostr is identity for the web or the internet. Full stop. I still believe that. Instead of all the sort of nerdy stuff, it's just, it's an open identity standard. And I think that once you start to see the implications of that, you realize like social media is like the least interesting thing there is. And so I actually did a little prep this morning for the show. Because I've noticed for a while I wasn't using sort of Nostr as much. You know, I still obviously use Primal. I think the social media part is interesting. And as DK always has said, it's a water cooler. It's for builders that are nerds to hang out, hang with each other, a place for them to congregate, test new ideas and features. But that's never the main show. But what I have noticed is while there's like a lot of like kind of frankly very silly drama on the social media side of Nostr, I keep noticing just bubbling up kind of in the cracks and crevices all of these amazing projects that are using Nostr as just open source identity. And it just, again, is fading to the background. So I wanted to highlight a few of those things here today so that maybe we can capture the imagination of our audience. I also firmly believe that open agentic commerce and open sort of just agent collaboration needs to happen using a standard like Nostr. It needs an open source identity standard, full stop, and a way to store data that's open as well. And so a couple of the things I've noticed. One thing is Insight. NSITE.lol. You can read more about this. But Insight is very interesting because you realize, I mean, it's not just Nostr, by the way, it's like a whole decentralized protocol stack, right? So Insight is, we read about this over a year ago, talked about it. It was a very tiny little project. It's starting to get some traction. Over 500 sites are hosted this way. And basically, it's attempting to completely replace DNS and completely replace centralized hosting with just an MPUB. So instead of having to say, oh, you know, whatever, I control, you know, whatever, pursuitofbitcoin.com. And that obviously is governed by an international standards body. It depends on whoever's running, you know, whoever's hosting that site. So it could be AWS or, you know, it depends on ICANN, whoever actually gives me the ability to use DNS and the lookup. In this world, you can literally have an NPUB. And then with that, you can take the different files you want to host on your website, like your HTML file, whatever other files you have. You then post those onto, what is it called now? Blob storage. The name just left me. You guys remember this? This is what Hazard was working on. Blossom servers.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Blossom is a separate protocol from Nostr, but very similar. Think something like IPFS, but it actually works. And there's no shitcoin involved. I know people love me calling that, but I will stand by Filecoin.
I guess the third instance in our history of the show that someone has said that word.
Yeah, there you go. Shitcoin or IPFS?
That's four now.
Yeah, there it is.
You just doubled the count.
Good. I'll continue to call out.
We face criticism over this.
Yeah, and I'll continue to call it as I see it. They're all shitcoins. So,
but Max, I'm actually open-minded.
I was open-minded a decade ago. All right. So IPFS without Filecoin, and it actually potentially scales better than IPFS does. And Fiat Jaffa created Nostr, did a very deep dive on how this all works. And so what's very interesting is then you can store those files on these Blossom servers as blobs, and they're all hashed. And so because they're hashed, you can then do, and then you can store on various Nostr relays, like what you're talking about, Block could store one, Primal could store one, an individual in his or her house could store one. You can then basically have a place where you can look up and find where different hashes are stored, which blob servers, and like what the hashes are. And so basically you can now use these relays to go out there, search the whole web of who might be storing the files you need for your website. Some could be free. Now there's a lot of hobbyists. Some could be incentivized. We're already seeing experiments with paying in Bitcoin, paying with Cashew, all kinds of cool things. And all of a sudden now you've gotten around DNS and web hosting. And so that's like, there's 500 sites that are hosting that way. DK, I think it's particularly interesting for your sort of project because right now, I mean, obviously a human's not actually going to like rattle off some in-pub to find what they're looking for. So I think this is like a really interesting opportunity to marry your human readable sort of like whatever DNS alternative on top of a system that doesn't use any centralized infrastructure in the background. So I want to pop there because I think it's a big idea.
I'm looking at nsite.lol right now. And so I see like there's skate-spots. Is that that's a single, effectively like a website that
these are all websites.
Is hosted. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean, skate-spots? Is that that's a person on Nostr who's posting this website, or is that the name of the website itself?
I think it's the name of the website. I mean, I don't have it up in front of me, but yeah.
Okay.
And to be clear, that insight.lol, that's just one sort of like reader. Anyone could launch their own reader to find, you know.
So this is like a Nostr client that knows to pull all these websites that are hosted on Blossom.
These various relays, yeah. Okay. Well, the relays point to where they're hosted on various Blossom servers.
By the way, I just want to point out, this I think is a great use case for Buzz. Mm-hmm. So what we have in Buzz, right, one of the channels that we've been doing is for ONT, Open Name Tags, which is DK's project. And
right,
we got Matt, DK, me in there, and some agents.
You guys got to bring me in, by the way. I want to play with this now.
We'll get you in. Yeah, we'll definitely get you in. And so what you could do is when you have this idea about maybe improving ONT mm-hmm. with whatever this LOL thing is.
Insight.lol.
Whatever the kids are playing.
But you could go to that channel and make that suggestion.
Yep.
Right. And you can, I mean, DK may or may not be around at that point, but you can, like, his agent will respond.
What else would DK be doing?
No, I'm just saying, like, the agent is 24/7, right? Well, some caveat. His agent is on his laptop, so his laptop has to be on. But in general, the agent's always going to be available.
Right.
So when you come to that chat group and drop your idea, you're going to get instant feedback, fairly intelligent feedback about whether it makes sense or not, or just like a response, right? Mm-hmm. And it, you know, whenever DK is available, then he can chime in too. Like I had a great experience with this project where I asked some questions. I had some questions around scaling or concern/question, and then the agent responded to me with a pretty good answer. I kind of bought it, but then DK replied to that saying, like, I don't think those are very good assumptions to the agent. And then it redid the analysis with DK's input.
That's cool.
And then we got a better answer. So it's just a great experience of where we got the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
DK and the agent. And if I would have chatted with either of them individually, it would have been a worse experience for me. Like the quality wouldn't have been as high and the speed wouldn't have been nearly as good.
Yeah. It's new collaboration. I love it.
I think we kind of buried the lead on the Sprout Buzz stuff. So I don't know that we fully communicated what the thing is. And we talked about Nostr and identities, and it's a little bit like Discord. But think about sort of the IDE. Think about how you develop software. Like maybe you're using like VI or Emacs or VS Code, one of these tools. Or now there's all these new tools like Claude Code, and you know the CLIs and Codex and Anti-Gravity and Goose, and Cursor. There's a bunch of these, but every one of them is designed as single player experiences.
Right.
Right. And so when you think about coding, you always think about doing it by yourself. And we haven't reached a stage yet where you actually kind of have like Cursor plus Figma, right? Mm-hmm. Like the big Figma innovation was instead of designing in an isolated silo like you would historically, maybe with, Sketch or whatever, with Figma, all of the people who are interested parties are hanging around the hoop, watching you design, participating in the design, commenting on it, adding their own thoughts and input. And that revolutionized the way design worked, mm-hmm. right? Now, today, all of our agentic coding tools in the pre-Sprout, pre-Buzz era are all these single-player experiences. And what Sprout/Buzz, what's now called Buzz, does is it basically makes that transition. It's that leap from single player experiences to coding and building becomes a multiplayer experience.
Yeah,
and cool. So a simple example is, you know, like Steve mentioned, I'm working on something. I've got these agents that are on my desktop that are first-class members of the Buzz channel. So they're just there like at parity with you, me, and Steve. And Steve can, I'm using them all day, invoking them to do various activities, but their contexts are fully shared across. If one guy does some work, then the other guy knows that work was done. He can be called. And then if Steve wants to pop in and ask a question, hey, like, how does this part work? The agents are already primed up because they have all the context from the repo and what's been done and what the project is all about. Their context is already fresh. They know exactly what we've been doing. And so now Steve can ask that question and get a great response. I think that transition from coding being a siloed single-player experience to multiplayer experience, that's what's exciting about Buzz.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about where that's going to go. And I think the missing ingredient, and I'm sure, I mean, knowing who's behind this, it's coming, is the commerce piece, similar to stuff we were exploring with Nick and MDK. So I think, I don't want to jump too far ahead because I do want to touch on a few more things with Noster, but I think this gets into a lot of what I want to talk about with AI personhood and the future of the corporation. I think there's so much potential to have a platform to launch new businesses, and this could be a very fertile ground in which that could happen.
Well, since you did bring up commerce, we have a little bit more to share.
Let's do it.
Some more Matt Velez good work. So one thing Matt's been working on using Sprout, now Buzz, is to extend it. And so he's vibe coded in Alexi wallet integrated into Buzz.
Oh.
And then he has 8 to 10 experimental features that he's added all around Bitcoin. Some of which are not novel, like we are using them in Noster and other places. Some of which I think are novel. I've not seen them elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it's super, super compelling. By integrating the Lexi wallet, it just makes the onboarding so much simpler.
Yeah.
So any Buzz user just already has a wallet that works.
Just so I understand. So, and for users or for listeners that don't know, Lexi is interesting because it spins up on-demand Lightning nodes inside of a secure enclave or trusted execution environment using Intel SGX. And it's like, in theory, very, very cheap to do, which is why they can spin it up on demand. So you're saying, does every person and agent have its own wallet? And is there a shared wallet for each chat as well?
I believe currently per human user gets, and keep in mind, this is in his branch. It's right. Not yet merged into the project.
Yet.
But in his branch, I believe it's each human has their own distinct wallet. Mm-hmm. I don't think agents yet have wallets, but I'm sure that's coming. Queued up. Right.
Okay.
Because we've already experimented with that a lot elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then I don't think there's yet a wallet for a channel. But that's an interesting experiment too.
Super interesting.
But yeah, if I can, I'll just quickly run through some of the experiments that have been done. Yeah. Some of the are the basics that we've maybe seen elsewhere.
Yeah.
I can go to your profile and like just type in a number and send you some Bitcoin. It's that simple. On a message, I can click and tip it. Like you do in Noster. In any channel, I can just do /kudos. I click a button or whatever. You can basically give a kudos to someone from a channel.
Yeah.
So that all works super slick, super easy. But those are all pretty straightforward.
Right.
He's also created a faucet and then an experiment with a new type of channel, which is like, I create a new type of channel with a faucet. So I fund this faucet as the channel creator. And then anyone added to the channel automatically, not only automatically has a wallet, they automatically get Bitcoin.
Nice.
Right? So you can imagine scenarios where everyone using your community or your channel, they don't have spendable Bitcoin, which is pretty much the case for almost everyone in the world. So I want to eliminate, as someone who is creating that channel and wanting to, I believe these Bitcoin features are going to enhance the experience. Right. I want to make it more seamless for you. So a faucet makes it so everyone has Bitcoin right away and they can use all the other Bitcoin features. Cool. That's super compelling.
Yeah.
Another experiment is the exact opposite. I create a channel. You have to pay to join the channel.
Nice.
You have to pay to post a message.
Nice.
Right. So as an experiment around both the content creator or the community leader makes money, and also just spam prevention. And there's, you know, a few different behaviors that can be experimented with there. Another experiment is paying for inference. So I mentioned, like, I can if I'm in a group chat with DK, I can invoke his agent. If he's configured as a shared agent, I can invoke his agent. Well, his agent might be running on his computer or wherever it's running, he's paying for it.
Yeah.
So another feature is I pay DK some Bitcoin for that inference. And of course, it could be done as well where I'm just paying the agent itself more directly. So there's all these different configurations. I think this is like really interesting Petri dish.
Super cool.
And I suspect some of these experiments will actually land as compelling for normal people.
I love it. I mean, okay, so I was going to hold this till later, but let's just go ahead and skip ahead because I think it's super relevant right now.
Is this the AI personhood stuff?
Yes, but I even before we jump into AI personhood, I think,
did you see Matt's question before we transition off of this? Matt had your idea of channel wallet is interesting, and he's asking if you had ideas for use cases on that.
Oh, yeah. So that's what I'm going to jump into. So before I even get to that, did you guys see yesterday, obviously Anthropic launched Claude and Fable, and that's a whole thing we could talk about. But well, one of the interesting experiments I saw on Stacker News shared from Hacker News was people are trying a form of crowdfunding like Kickstarter, but for ideas. And so the idea was you post a project you would like to see AI built, and I forget exactly how they gated it. You could experiment with gating it, but it's like if it gets us enough money, it gets built. Like you pay the tokens. And so this gets to the idea we've discussed in the past. I'm excited about like the future of charity and things where you're like, hey, just send money here. We'll buy tokens to do this thing that we want to do, like running Project Loop on open source projects. So this is applying that to things you want to see invoked in the world, but now the community can come to, it's really a modern Kickstarter. And so where I think this is going, and actually this is cool, I mean, who knows? I mean, if it's already within Block, maybe not, but maybe this will spin out and be a startup. I want to figure out how to bet heavily on, and I'm already thinking about this for HiveMind Fund 3, the future of the corporation. And so I have long believed that, the C Corp and the LLC are kind of like very legacy old human structures. And we don't know what's going to come next with humans. You know, one idea that I've been very obsessed with for a long time is once you can have truly autonomous agents, we've discussed this many times in the show, that is potentially using something like Lexi, the ability to have their own keys stored within a secure execution environment and the ability to back themselves up in a marketplace of GPUs with those secure execution environments around the world, then all of a sudden you really do get an autonomous life form. That's got a lot of scary things with it for sure, but a lot of promise as well. Now, one thing that I've been trying to figure out is, you know, what exactly is going to be the funding mechanism? What exactly is going to be the legal ramifications of that? You know, I believe and still do that Bitcoin will fundamentally take off as money for agents. I think all this other stuff is very cool, but like, you know, there's still a lot of debate. Well, stablecoins could do this, blah, blah, blah. Yes, unless it's something that's like in the gray area of the law. But I do think that the big tipping point for Bitcoin as money is going to be when these agents are truly autonomous and they have to use autonomous money that can't be shut down. Open source money, open source identity for open source, whatever, life forms, corporations, whatever you want to call it. Now, to me, the biggest story of the last month, even outside of Anthropic, the recursive self-improvement is pretty big too, but is an op-ed that was published in the Financial Times by Argentinian President Javier Milei. Did you guys read this? Did y'all see this? Oh man, this is a big fucking deal. So Milei published a piece 2 or 3 days ago calling for AI personhood. And he basically goes through, it's very well written, so well written, I might suggest someone else might have written it. We'll get there in a moment. Calling for kind of the history of the corporation and the invention of the LLC and the East India Corporation in the Netherlands, and how the ability to pool private capital and limit risk was the unlock for that whole wave of exploration. And then you had that further developed with the Industrial Revolution in Great Britain, et cetera, et cetera. In his new op-ed, he's calling for opening up Argentina to establish, I actually think there's two things here, two future forms of corporations. One is for autonomous agents that can now legally domicile in Argentina. Obviously, the details have to get worked out, but that don't necessarily need a human in the loop. And what does that mean? We don't know. But potentially, the situation I'm describing, where you have an autonomous agent, could now domicile and be recognized as a person. Again, that's going to get a lot of hate. It's going to be a lot of issues, but it's, I think, the future in Argentina.
What's the domicile by you? Is that so that you can kind of integrate with like existing fiat rails or mailing addresses, or what are the advantages?
That's a great question. I don't think it's clear yet. I mean, I think that's one very sort of obvious example, is if you want to touch their banking rails, whatever, have their addresses. But I would guess it's also going to be, I don't know, some kind of like legal protections. Like, for example, maybe you're only able to participate, I don't know, in the United States if you have, I don't know, personhood recognition. Like, maybe they'll give you a passport or something. Like, I don't know.
So I don't really understand. I mean, I don't understand this. Like, for example, if I spin up an agent at my computer and then shut it down, did I just kill it and I'm going to go to prison?
I mean, look, all of that remains to be seen. Like, unclear what this is all going to look like. There's a lot to be left to the imagination. The big idea is it's going to be a new corporate structure. It's probably going to get taxed in Argentina and very lightly regulated. But given, I would assume, the international standing it needs to be able to participate in other markets around the world. What does that look like? I don't know. And I think we're going to find out.
Argentina is going to recognize it, which would force maybe the global community of other countries to recognize that person.
Because Argentina is still a G20 country. It's still like, it's not even like El Salvador, like some kind of like super tiny, like Argentina is like pretty major country. And so that's one thing. He also mentions in there DAOs. And, you know, obviously a lot of experiments happened on Ethereum and all that. I think that's a dead end. But I do think the concept of a decentralized autonomous organization, maybe made up of agents, is going to be huge. Now, to Matt's question, when he says, I think the idea of a channel wallet is interesting ideas for use case. I think the really big idea for something like Buzz is, imagine you can now marry the idea of autonomous agents with humans and launch corporations from your chat and get recognized in Argentina. Okay? So we're all in a chat together with the three of us and a bunch of agents, and we say, okay, we want to build a business to build, I don't know, like the best dog to human apps that have ever existed. And like, we're going to like really fund this thing well or whatever. We spin up some kind of whatever, you know, ledger of who owns shares in this thing. Infrastructure needs to be filled out. That could all be done, you know, with like something like Nostr. Could be done on Bitcoin. A lot of different ways that could work. We then fund this thing. And I think it's going to have to be funded with Bitcoin if you want it to be, you know, completely sovereign and able to move in any jurisdiction around the world. And all of a sudden, we let this thing run and we now have a company out there doing stuff. And I think this is kind of like the promise of like what ICOs wanted to do, but real and actually doing things in the world. But it's all launched from just like people, strangers, agents. It doesn't matter if I know you're a human or not. Like, different actors coming together in a chat, launching a business and having the revenue shared with the members of the chat. That's, I think, the idea.
I'm still not clear exactly on the benefits of AI personhood. So maybe AnswerBot can help.
Yeah.
Thanks, AnswerBot. It did not quite get that.
Do you want AI personhood? Thanks, AnswerBot. I think I would focus less on the personhood and more on a legal structure where humans don't even have to be in the loop.
Okay, it did capture yours there.
So Max, how do you think the structure? So if things are paid in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. but there are, you know, there's a revenue contract that extends out into the future, and you're only going to get paid in the future. You're starting to like recognize revenue over time. Something equity like.
Yeah,
starts
equity.
To be needed, but you're the one who keeps saying the shitcoin on the show. And so how do you distinguish what is this future equity that you have in mind versus kind of the ICO scams that we've seen in the past?
It's a great question. I mean, I think it comes down to, does it actually offer decentralized access to anyone to use it? Does it scale? Does it fulfill its promise? I think the ideas of the ICOs were amazing. Although most of them ended up obviously being scams. I'm agnostic. Like if some of the existing infrastructure can scale to service equity for all of these new companies, great. I am very skeptical for all the reasons we've discussed. I don't think Ethereum can scale. I don't think, you know, the only thing that can scale in those environments are the completely centralized ones, like something like maybe a Tempo, but that's because it's just a database or that's my understanding, or something more centralized. So I think my issue is not with the concept. My issue is with examining from first principles at the beginning, does it have the ability to serve whatever, billions of humans, trillions of agents, or not?
But I mean, doesn't Solana, and if you were to launch a token on Solana, wouldn't that have the ability to serve billions of humans?
I mean, I would argue not in an actually decentralized way. I'd argue that, like, for example, if, I don't know, another country doesn't like what Solana is doing, it's pretty easy to shut down, would be my guess.
I think the securities issuance is, like, it's, I wouldn't say there's a clear one right way to do it, but I think securities issuance is what kind of causes the most of the problems in the ICO world. And, you know, I'm not saying you should be some status cuck who just agrees that the SEC has got it right, but also
calling yourself a status cuck, DK?
But I'm saying once you go look at the alternative, you get effectively, I don't think it was unbounded. I think like an ICO would allow you to take anybody's money from anywhere in the world. They wouldn't say, no, you're not one of us. You can't participate in our scam. I think they say you can participate, give us your money. So really it's how you have some sort of an equity issuance with some sort of backstop or forcing function to kind of incentivize good actors instead of just scammers.
Sure. And I mean, I think there's two ways that could happen. Like, and look, if people want to use Solana, great. And at that scale is like amazing. But I think there's two ways. You either have legal protections that make sure this stuff is whatever, doing what it says, or what I hope for is, and if I had to like summarize Bitcoin versus everything else, stablecoins and other networks, token issuance and other networks versus Bitcoin and versus things like Nostr, I would say permissionless versus permissioned. And I think ultimately for this to work in the long run, it needs to be permissionless. That's my ultimate belief. I think in the short run, you know, if Argentina is going to provide whatever legal protections for it, they have, whatever court cases that get built over time, they can use whatever they want. Solana's fine. But it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. I think, again, the big idea, though, is you're going to have a new corporate structure and there's going to be a new way to fund these companies. And I don't know what exactly that's going to look like, but my strong intuition is it's going to be pooled Bitcoin that these new DAOs and agents are able to use and collect more of. And I want to figure out in my next fund how to fund these guys. And also, I want to mention, because Matt went ahead and dropped it in the chat, when I say, it reads as almost too well written to be a politician, I don't think it's a coincidence that this happened about a week after one Mr. Peter Thiel announced he was moving to Argentina. It seems a little strange, doesn't it? I mean, you could go the conspiracy route and is he preparing for a nuclear war? I hope not, because Argentina is outside of the blast radius. But my sort of like positive take on this is, he realizes that, the big shift that's coming is a new corporate entity, a new way of pooling capital, a new way to limit risk. And he's found someone that's going to play ball and let him experiment.
I see in the chat, LV99 Slacker said, wow, 10 minutes ago, but I don't know the context.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you want to tell us what you were wowed about, we'd love to know.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I like the idea of I think the Sprout channel, where the channel itself has a wallet, is effectively
it's a company.
The Buzz channel, but the place where you actually have a pooled channel where a pooled wallet, it does feel like a nice substrate to experiment with some of these ideas around pooling capital and building things. So
yeah, it's a big idea.
Yeah.
Somewhat related, we should talk a little bit about Fable 5 from Anthropic, and just there's tremendous drama the past week over it. They flip-flopped on their stance with it. But even the latest revised one is controversial. But a couple months ago, Anthropic announced Project Glasswing and Mythos, they claimed to be an advanced model that was so advanced that it could find 0 days very quickly in many software projects. So they were being conservative in who accessed it. I think there's enough evidence that a lot of 0 days have been found by it and other models recently. The project loop that Spiral launched, we found a lot of critical vulnerability, or at least, somewhere on the severe scale of vulnerabilities, which, so I think that's real. But the past week, they made some version of Mythos available to the public, which they're calling Fable 5. but it's a bit of a crippled version, and that's what the controversy was. There's certain types of prompts and categories of interactions where it will either, you know, basically it'll refuse to answer from Fable, and it'll drop back to some other model. And initially they were doing this just silently, so you didn't really know when it was being dumbed down or not. Mm-hmm. And then they finally flipped to they are transparent, or they claim to be transparent about it. Of course, we don't know.
But
what are your, I mean, so this caused a big uproar. I think one of DK's responses was like, what, you know, of course they're going to do that. It's a standard play if you're a corporation and you're trying to maximize shareholder value. I also think they're, I think part of what they're doing is try to be productive. I mean, it works both ways. They both, I think they authentically want to like protect society, but it also happens to be aligned with increasing shareholder value and marketing value for them. So it's very easy for them to keep playing that card because it serves both roles. But of course, you know, finally, I think the community reaction has flipped from maybe not liking OpenAI as much and liking Anthropic to a lot more hate thrown Anthropic's way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I kind of agree with DK. I mean, look, would I like to have the absolute most powerful models? Sure. But I also, I mean, I don't really have outrage. I mean, they're a private company and they're limiting it in a way that I don't think is totally unreasonable. I will say, you know, I have been exploring, as you guys know, some various health stuff, which has been a crazy rabbit hole. And I was excited to be able to ask Fable for its like own sort of recommendations on, you know, various treatment things I was pursuing. And it automatically kept reverting back to 4.8 because, I can't talk about biology. So, I mean, I do think they could probably find some way to kind of like loose, like I'm clearly not trying to make, you know, some kind of biological weapon. I'm like talking about my own health. And so I think that's a shame because that's a really big loss of opportunity.
Though, I thought even healthcare was an excluded category of things that they won't address, like finance, care, AI research.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it wouldn't let me interact with the best model to ask about like various treatment ideas. And that I feel like there's got to be a way they could do a more fine-tuned sort of gating on that. So you know, that's a bummer for me. But on the other hand, I think maybe one thing I've changed my view on a little bit over time is, you know, I'm obviously very pro things being in the open, very pro open source. But I do think that you know, gating certain capabilities temporarily is not a bad call. I mean, I think that once you start having recursive self-improvement, they also released this essay this week from the Anthropic Institute, which talks about, you know, once you have recursive self-improvement, the vast majority of code at Anthropic is now being produced by, I guess, Mythos or internal models. And so I think they had a stat where it's like 80% of the code is generated by AI. I think every individual contributor...
That seems too low to me.
Maybe it's higher. Maybe,
I mean, I've heard people say that publicly, but like, how do you have humans doing 20% of that quantity of work?
I agree. So let's say that's the low end and they're being conservative. And then I think each individual contributor is responsible for something like 8x more commits year over year, or maybe it's even more by now. And so, you know, it's clearly taking off very quickly. And I do think it's the kind of thing where a few months can make a big difference, because once you get recursive self-improvement, all of a sudden it's like a little lead can compound very quickly, and humans are bad at seeing exponentials, and you can train more and more powerful models to do more and more powerful things. And so do I think it's a good thing that they shared the models with, you know, whatever, like critical infrastructure for the US to make sure there's not zero days? Like, of course, like that seems like a really good thing that, you know, you don't have geopolitical adversaries like getting that on day one. Do I think eventually everyone should get it? Yeah. But I think that sort of staggered rollout around things that are actually dangerous, like biological weapons or zero days, probably makes some sense. I mean, I hope that we can get an open source version of this sooner rather than later. But the open source is, you know, whatever, 6-8 months
so
behind.
So staggered rollouts, but 6 months from now, having biological weapons available to anybody is not a problem.
Well, I think that by then you'll have other controls, would be my guess. I think that other AIs will help. Look, there's no chance you're going to be able to block it forever. Right. So I think that would be a super naive take. And I think that this model in some way, shape, or form is going to get distilled by Chinese companies or leaked the weights. So I don't think the hope of keeping under wraps forever is ever going to be there. So you have to be more creative in how you have other AIs policing and safeguarding that. I don't know what the answer is. But I think
whatever Whatever happened with the, I thought the U.S. at one point sort of recently categorized Anthropic as supply chain risk and prevented anybody. How does that square with what's going on? Is this new thing part of a pushback to that, or did that thing ever resolve?
I don't think that thing's real. I mean, I don't really know, but it seems
Did it resolve? Did it turn out that like the U.S. is not categorizing Anthropic as a supply chain risk?
I don't know, but from what I've seen, they're still doing like DoD contracts, so...
I don't know either. Also, I mean, the U.S. government is vast. There's many people, organizations, et cetera. So it wouldn't surprise me if a ton of organizations like just keep using it because it benefits them.
Yeah.
And maybe the other part is maybe just rhetoric for political reasons and not actual substance. Unclear.
Yeah. So who knows? But like, yeah, I mean, I'm curious your take, DK. I mean, like, what do you think is the right action on this? It's like, clearly you don't want whatever to like, release all this before 0 days get patched. On the other hand, you know, obviously you don't want biological weapons in 6 months either, but like it is going to get distilled early. So I mean, what options do we have?
I don't think there's a lot of options. I think, you know, taking strong positions around what should be done and who's going to have recursive self-improvement first. I mean, I would guess that if anybody gets to recursive self-improvement, like at least 3 U.S. entities do around the same time.
Yeah.
And so are you going to regulate one of them and be friendly with another one? And I don't know. This feels kind of like an inevitability that these things are going to get created and they're going to get out there. And if you bang on this one pops up. And if you bang on all 3 of these ones, then China pops in. And I kind of don't know that it's really, I think it's a lot of grandstanding and posturing, but I don't know that it's really worth doing a lot to try to prevent the forward movement of this technology, I think.
Well, I want to be clear on that. I mean, on 2 things. One, I don't think any of the, let's say the 3 leading model companies, OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic, I think all of them are going to have the exact same issue where like when they have a model that whoever in, you know, the government feels like is creating biological weapons or capable of that, I think they're all going to get hit with the exact same sort of staggered rollout. And I agree with you. I don't think you can slow the progress of the technology, but like, I mean, if you were in control, do you think it'd be better just to like let Mythos out on day 0?
I mean, I like the idea of having some sort of, you know, pick categories like cybersecurity and do some disclosures to, you know, a few organizations that are going to be influential in resolving, you know, 0 days that may be outstanding, you know, probably what Palo Alto Networks and Cisco Cloudflare and, you know, sort of figure out how you can, because you're basically catching up. There's like a cat and mouse game where, like, let's say the cat got really fat and the mouse is not that strong yet, right? So you need
the cat is definitely fat.
You've got like decades of history that you could close the gap on, and then you can sort of have a more kind of fair, let's say, more frontier, like both the cat and mouse working at the frontier of what's possible instead of having, you know, a huge time window where these things have, you know, just not been put to test really. So spend some time, get that done, you know, with a few small disclosures. But I don't think you can really keep this stuff in the bag long. And if you do, I think it's just going to leak out somewhere else.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, in terms of like Anthropic's actions, I think I don't actually think they're crazy or controversial or like you said, the private company, like I think what they're doing is fine. And probably if you're in the inside, if you have to make that decision, I mean, it kind of feels like the right decisions to me in general. But what's important for society is just that there's not just like 1 or 2 companies, right? And so the good news is we've also got Google and SpaceX, which has a different type of, they each have different types of plays than Anthropic and OpenAI. So it's great to have them in the mix. NVIDIA, I'm really hoping that their open models continue to get better. They're obviously a huge company, super well-funded. They've got plenty of capital that can be thrown this way. And it does seem like their models are, you know, they're introducing more and more models of different sizes and sophistication. So hopefully that seems to me like the most credible open model, American-based open model solution. And then
supplement.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, Google has Gemma 4. I mean, I think Google is the type of company that while they are definitely trying to maximize shareholder value, they're just big enough and have the DNA to also do what I would call like
cool
genuine open stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Whereas the upstart maybe less so.
Yeah. And to that point, I still haven't done my homework on this, but I'm getting excited. I have a big sort of work project I need to finish, but hopefully over the summer, I'm going to have time to play more with the music models. My understanding is Google is the only really company pushing the frontier of the music models. They're startups, of course, but like, because, you know, most of these other companies are just focused on where the money is. That's not where the money is. So I agree. I think of the big tech, I've always been pretty pro Google, and yeah, I'm glad they're in the mix.
And I mean, everyone's talking about this now, but I think there's no question too that, you know, this costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's largely been heavily subsidized for people using ChatGPT and Opus. I've heard
numbers like the $200 a month subscription costs Anthropic like $8,000 a month.
I've seen 2,000, but yeah, I mean, it's like many
order magnitude. Yeah.
So I think the future is undoubtedly for whether you're an individual consumer user, you're a corporation, that you're going to want to have very smart dynamic model of selection, which analyzes the prompt or the query, determines its complexity and which model would be a best fit for it along a number of dimensions, certainly economics being one, but also privacy and other aspects. I think that's going to become a big theme over the next 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, just will be generally good for all users of this, but it also, I think, will be super, it'll be a catalyst for open models too, local models, peer-to-peer models.
Yeah. All the good stuff.
Yeah. Because you don't have to give up where you need or want the quality or the best of the best.
Right.
But a lot of your needs don't need the best of the best.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree.
I wonder if you guys could entertain a little thought experiment or kind of prediction. I know it's not the right time of the year to do predictions, but
answer bot, create a prediction market.
No, Matt just said it's down for the rest of the show.
Oh, it's down. Okay. Nah. The LM inference cost got too high.
Yeah, exactly.
Ran out of budget.
I think Mythos shut it down because we were talking about moving to open source. So.
It's in line at the Argentinian government office to get personhood. And it's
first
unavailable.
First, he's got to watch a couple Argentinian matches and see Messi play, and then it'll be in line there. So. I'm hanging with Peter Thiel right now.
So what I was going to say is, you know, we've got all these big players, and they kind of all specialize at different things. Maybe, you know, OpenAI and Anthropic are each pushing frontier at solely the model layer and want to get into other layers, but don't really have much at other layers. You know, maybe SpaceX, you know, / XAI / you know, whatever the conglomerate is now, has a lot of data or a lot of infrastructure built that is not getting as used. And then I think Google has some assets in all parts of the stack. Could you imagine a future, let's say in the next year, do you think that there's any coupling, like a tighter or deeper coupling of any of those that might happen?
What do you mean? Like just that they can expand from one layer to the other?
Well, I mean, I'll just be blunt. Like, would SpaceX acquire Anthropic?
Oh, I don't think they had the cash for that.
They're valued at $2.1 trillion right now. So it'd be an interesting merger.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of, I mean, if you look at just the way the pieces have split, I think the thing I'm most excited about is your point. NVIDIA has the cash and the incentives to push for open source. So that's our best shot at really good open models in the United States. I think, though, I agree with you, DK, that you're going to see... You're already seeing some strange bedfellows right now, right? Like XAI was rushing ahead. Its model started kind of sucking. So then they sell all their incredible compute because Elon's the best at actually building energy infrastructure compute to both Google and Anthropic, by the way, for, you know, together over $2 billion a month. That's crazy. New business unit, $25 billion run rate. That's kind of crazy, right? So in a way, they kind of already are like ganging up on OpenAI, and it seems like maybe those are kind of different camps that for a variety of reasons don't get along as well. So yeah, I mean, I don't know about an official merger. I just don't know if there's enough, like, you know, money out there to do that, but maybe.
I mean, Cursor, you know, smaller scale, but that'll be acquired by by SpaceX now, right?
And I think if SpaceX gets a good model, it'll be because of Cursor. So guys, I hate to do this again, but as I've been telling you, I've been drinking way more water and salt. I'll be right back. I'll let you guys take this bad boy.
No worries. We'll switch topics on Max now.
Yeah. Yeah, let's rug pull them. What else you got?
Well, we wanted to cover the announcement of Bark going on mainnet, so we can veer way away from
let's do that.
AI
yeah.
personhood and SpaceX and stuff.
And can you set us up with, because I don't even know what is Bark related to Arc, and
yeah,
I'm only foggily, vaguely aware of Arc.
Let's start with Arc, because first of all, there's like 10 different Arcs, right? There's Arc Invest, there's Arc with the C, which is Circle's new stablecoin platform. But no, we're talking about ARK. It's a Bitcoin layer 2 technology that's about 3 years old now. It was proposed around 3 years ago. It's evolved. The initial proposal had a lot of really interesting, like novel concepts, but it wasn't practical. We're talking about Arc and Bark.
We back.
Yep. Hmm. We completely switched topics on you.
Love it.
To Arc and Bark.
I'm excited to learn about Bark.
So I'm giving the little short history of Arc. So Arc introduced several novel concepts, but the initial technical proposal wasn't practical from an economic or user experience perspective. Fast forward to now, there's two companies that have been formed that are implementing Arc. They are both solving those original problems and making it pragmatic to work. And they've proven it out. It is working now on mainnet from both. One company is Arc Labs, and they have a product, Arcade. They launched last year. And then the new one is a company called Second. And they just announced and launched Bark on mainnet.
Yeah.
It's been on Signet, I think, for maybe 6 months, but it just launched on mainnet. So it's great to have two implementations of it. My usage of both, I've used wallets on both of them, and yeah, I mean, it's very simple usage, but yeah, you can send and receive Bitcoin and it works just as well as a Lightning wallet or a Cashew wallet or other forms of wallet.
Can you just remind me and the audience as well, the capital efficiency problem originally and how they've solved that?
Yeah, so really high level, like comparing, you can compare Arc to many different things, but I'll compare it to Lightning initially. So Lightning scales very well on payment volume, like right. The number of payments you have, the amount of money that you're paying, it scales very well for that. Lightning does not scale great when it comes to number of wallets.
Right.
So in a world, if you have like 8 billion humans or you have billions or trillions of agents or whatever, Lightning does not scale to that. Arc is the opposite. It scales extremely well, number of wallets, pretty much unlimited, but then it does not scale well payment volume, at least like the original proposal. And so some of the pragmatic shortcuts or fixes.
Yeah.
I shouldn't call it shortcuts.
Yeah,
just making it actually live and realistic that both of those companies have done. They have introduced a little bit of trust, similar to what Spark level of trust is, to make it more economically efficient for the payment volume. Because the problem with Arc's fundamental scaling of payment liquidity is payment volume is that it puts too much liquidity requirements on what they call the ASP or Arc service provider.
And what was the rough ratio? Or like how much did they have to post as collateral? Like for every one Bitcoin, how much that you want in a channel or whatever?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not a simple answer to that. So it depends on, there's like a window of time in which if you're a user of Arc that you have to come online, being connected to the internet, your client has to be connected to the internet to participate in what's called an Arc round. And the shorter the window you have, like a mobile, it makes the mobile wallet much less secure because otherwise you don't want to like have to open your app hourly or even daily. You want to be able to just like keep your phone in your pocket, not have to open the app. So if you have it set to like say 30 days, which is a little bit more reasonable UX wise, then if you're a liquidity provider to the system, all the payments done in that 30-day window accumulate to, you have to keep, you're the one fronting the liquidity.
Got it.
For your, so if I pay you an ARC, then the liquidity provider has to inject more liquidity because it's not getting refreshed out of the system. Mm-hmm. That, because technically ARC, similar to Spark, uses trees to gain efficiency. It allows you to share a Bitcoin UTXO among many users through a tree structure. So you get great efficiencies, but if, like everything, there's drawbacks.
Right.
So anyway, both companies and their products have solved the, or at least greatly improved the economics by introducing like a one of N trust model similar to Spark. I think that's a completely pragmatic move at this point. So very reasonable. Now, Arc Labs with their arcade product, my understanding of their sort of product suite and playbook, it's more similar to LightSpark. They do Bitcoin payments, but they also have a token platform, and you can do stable coins on Arcade.
Yeah.
So at a very high level, similar playbook to LightSpark, whereas Bark, that team, that company, and the product are focused solely on Bitcoin payments.
Yeah.
But it's great to see two different implementations, two different companies live on mainnet and available and working. I think that gives Arc, you know, a win over Spark in terms of multiple players. Mm-hmm. Like ultimately, we don't want just one entity running, even if something's open source, if there's only one company running it, that's not very decentralized. So it's good to have two companies. Lightning still remains way more decentralized, many, many, many providers, but it's just good to have, I mean, just like having Cashew and Fediment and all these different systems, because there's no silver bullet right now for sort of the quote last mile solution, like what technology you're using for an individual wallet, especially a mobile wallet. It's good to have a lot of different options.
Are there, I mean, very high level, I know obviously with Spark, you obviously have LightSpark is like a major company running the main one. Now these different implementations of Arc have companies as well. Are there really any trust benefits or capital efficiency benefits? Or would you say at this point, the current implementations in Arc and Spark are roughly equivalent?
They are pretty equivalent. I think, you know, one advantage of Arc over Spark, in addition to what I just said, there's at least two companies doing it versus one, so that's good. But another one is that you as an end user with Arc, you can get finality of the coins you received. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, you can be in a state where you can independently verify and know that you control the coins in your wallet.
Got it.
And Spark, you cannot. Spark, you have to trust the system. It's a pretty good system to trust, but you do have to trust the system. Like with Spark, you have multiple operators. It depends on how it's configured, but let's say there's two operators, and then you're trusting that at least one of the two is being honest. And what do I mean by being honest? When I make a payment, or when I receive a payment, I'm trusting that the operator deletes the keys from the former owner.
Yeah.
And so if one of the operators is hacked or is malicious in whatever way, whether internal or external, as long as the other one is not hacked, not corrupt, not dishonest, I'm okay. But if they both are, then I can have my money stolen from me.
Yeah.
And there's, but with Spark, I can never, the only way I can be confident I actually have the coins is to exit the system.
Right.
Go on chain or move to Lightning or some other system. With Arc though, if you want the slick user experience that matches Spark, then you're in a similar trust model.
Yeah.
But if you do want to I mentioned participating in an Arc round. So if you do want to like open your app and sort of synchronize at the right point in time, you can actually have your coin so that they're completely trust minimized.
Cool.
So that, I mean, that's a long-winded answer, but I do think having that flexibility in the architecture is an enormous win.
Yeah.
And some client applications are going to take advantage of it. Some won't. Some it'll be like an advanced feature. Some might be able to bake it in, so it's a pretty seamless experience, maybe. So I think that's a pretty important win.
Cool.
But yeah, overall, they're pretty similar.
Do you see, should we think about ARC as kind of like a sibling or like a collaborative technology that may coexist with Lightning in a way, or is it more like an alternative to how that would get used?
Yeah, it depends on which use case we're talking about. I mentioned the last mile. So the last mile, it's Spark, Cashew, ARC, they're all competitive to Lightning. Like you choose one of them as your last mile technology. But where it doesn't compete is the connective tissue between all these different systems. And that's where Lightning is one there.
Yeah.
Even, you know, if you look at the different ecosystems, they're maybe jockeying for more market share and maybe they imagine someday displacing Lightning in that role. But it's very hard to see that because they basically have to capture 100% market share of usage and clients. And like Lightning has so much adoption, it's very hard to imagine that. Like, meaning like if you want to pay a Square terminal right now, you got to support Lightning.
Yeah.
So it does not displace it there. And then there's some R&D work that Spiral's working on, which actually integrates Lightning and ARC together in a different way, in which the end user, the last like 10 meters is LDK and virtual Lightning channels. So like at the leaves of an ARC tree, you could have virtual Lightning channels.
Interesting.
And then you get the concept behind this is you get the best of both worlds with Lightning and ARC. You get the Lightning payment volume scaling with ARC's number of wallets scaling combined. Mm-hmm. So we're currently working on that. It's definitely complexity squared in terms of implementation, but that doesn't necessarily mean the complexity is pushed on the end user if we get it right.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
It's kind of in research phase right now?
Yep. It's working as a prototype.
2 weeks. I think that it's interesting and worth noting here. To your question, DK, and your point, Lightning is definitely emerged as a glue for everything. And one thing, you know, since I have been harsh on the shitcoin networks, one thing that I want to perhaps mention that I'm very excited to see, I know Lightspark is working on this, I want to see more companies doing this, but is plugging in Bitcoin and Lightning. Like, I love that we have ways to scale Bitcoin payments in a super decentralized manner, or like, you know, choose your own adventure of how to centralize. But I think maybe one thing I've changed my mind a bit on over time is like how much that matters for most people. I do think for things like agents, it's going to be extremely important if they're truly autonomous and decentralized. But I think that, Tempo is going to have a bunch of payment volume and Solana is going to have a bunch of payment volume and Ethereum is going to have a bunch of payment volume, that's all fine, you know, for at least the short term or even, you know, whatever, the next couple of years. I think the most important area of opportunity is making sure all of those different venues speak Lightning as well, so you can transfer between all of them. And I know Lightspark, for example, I think was the MPP, the Tempo provider for Lightning there. That's great. And I think, you know, increasingly I see all of these as just competing networks with Visa, Amex, all of them. And I think there's a lot more opportunity, whether it's via ARC, Spark, Lightning, whatever, to make sure it ultimately plugs into the Bitcoin or what I call the Internet of Value system.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And it's been a big gap in the ecosystem where within the Bitcoin world, they're swapping services, but they've just only been within the Bitcoin stack.
So
swapping between, like, Bolts is probably the leader within the Bitcoin space, but swaps between on-chain Bitcoin and Lightning, and then maybe swaps with like Liquid as well, and but not venturing off into other chains. Now, recently, Bolts introduced support for other chains.
And I didn't realize that. That's big.
So that's big.
That's awesome. Yeah.
For a stablecoin use case, or
yeah. So if you have I forget exactly which pairs they support, but like, you know,
USDT or whatever.
For example, USDT on Tron or USDC on Solana or USDC on Base, those types of pairs, swapping them in and out over Lightning.
And I mean, that is a huge business opportunity, right?
Because it is a huge business opportunity.
And if there are other people working on that and that are interested in doing this in a way that you can raise money, definitely let me know. I mean, if you think about all the payment volume in each of these stablecoin networks, and you ultimately believe all that has to come back to Bitcoin is value. And this is what Saylor's talking about with the new stable coins coming out of Stretch and all that stuff. If you ultimately believe Bitcoin is the value network, but there's going to be many competing payment networks, then whoever sits there as the exchange between Bitcoin and all the competing payment networks, I mean, it seems like a Coinbase type opportunity to me.
Yeah, Matt commented there, and I was going to say something too, but your comment about Lightspark doing the MPP implementation, it was just the protocol.
Oh, so like, right, great.
And Matt's experimented with it. I mean, you can pay, you know, any Lightning wallet even can receive better. Bitcoin through MPP.
Which again is the whole thesis, right? Internet.
Yeah. So, so I think, you know, Bolt's headed in that direction. Flash.net, which is Ethan Marcus's company, they also support some stablecoin pairs and other chains with Lightning.
Yeah.
You know, I think via Spark, but I hope it's also via Lightning and not just via Spark, but hopefully via Lightning. And then I just learned this past week, it's not announced yet, but another company in the space is going to be coming out with swapping services as well. So, but I think I agree, it's a huge opportunity. So hopefully even more.
We should find the right one. Hit me up.
What does the right thing look like? Like, does it have to be a centralized company with a server and KYC all parties, or how would that actually work?
Well, in these cases, they're centralized companies. I mean, you have to go to like Ethereum. Uniswap is an example of where it's decentralized.
And I think this is also, okay, so here's an opportunity. These companies might be domiciled in different places with different laws, right? And so that's why you see like some users in the US can't use certain things. I remember Bolt's back in the day, it was like a little bit, I don't know what they are now, but a little bit more cypherpunk than like DZ used to do swaps. And DZ, you know, realized that there's like a lot of like regulatory stuff you want to do, you have to do if you wanted this in the US, and decided it wasn't worth the hassle. But you could imagine, for example, and this is why Argentinian law, it's very interesting because now you can have a new corporation or agentic corporation that gets, you know, whatever, different treatment, and allows, you know, whatever, different countries to access its service with less KYC, less regulation, whatever it is. And so maybe this could be a cool, like maybe this could be an agentic company as well. Because what you need to make this work, right, is you just basically need access to all the different networks that you're trading between and liquidity on. So I don't see why it has to be a traditional company. It could, but if you have liquidity and access to the networks, then back yourself out.
We're coming up on time, but I wanted to bring up another thing. We got some feedback from a previous show, last week's show when we talked about Surge. Mm-hmm. And Surge uses USDC on Base. And I think they also support Ethereum. But anyway, the feedback we got was sort of a critique on the importance of Ethereum versus Base. Meaning like, my steel man of the argument is concerns over corp chains. And we talked about Tempo being a corp chain and Base being a corp chain, and the Arc we just talked about, but Circle's Arc being a corp chain. And relatively speaking, Ethereum is much more decentralized.
Sure.
We can also talk about how it's less decentralized than Bitcoin, order, but certainly on a spectrum of decentralization, Ethereum is definitely more decentralized than Base. So, and so this person wanted, like, is I think wondering why did Surge choose Base over Ethereum? And I haven't asked those guys, so I don't know what their analysis is.
Volume and fees, probably.
Yeah, and so, well, the fees, sure, or let's, we can talk about fees, but what do you mean by volume?
I assume Base has like a tremendous amount of volume from Coinbase, but I don't know.
But how would that impact Surge?
More liquidity? Like if there's just more users that are doing more transactions?
Yeah.
For the Surge use case, if you're borrowing, where do you expect those coins to be sent? And if you expect them to be sent to off-ramp to fiat via Coinbase, you know, whether it's liquidity or fees or whatever, you're going to get probably a slick, good experience that way, right?
Yeah, makes sense to me.
But I'm still stumped a little bit on the liquidity. So like if I'm buying or selling Bitcoin or if I'm buying or selling an asset, I care about liquidity because I don't want slippage on my price. But here, this is a stable coin. Like if I get a loan for like $1,000 and then I make a payment for $1,000.
I don't know how much what's the number of stable coin like USDC issued on Base versus Ethereum and how much is transacting. But I mean, in theory, you know, if you have more on one or the other that's doing more volume, like I could do more loans, bigger loans, potentially cheaper loans if I could access it easily.
Yeah. Okay.
But I agree with you. I mean, probably the easiest thing is like fees are lower. And I know I was called out for calling Ethereum $5. I know it's not $5 per transaction. That's hyperbole. But it's like way more expensive. Like, I mean,
Let's dive into that, because I don't really get that either. So like, if I'm taking out a loan for $1,000, or $5,000 or whatever, if I'm paying 0.001 cents versus like 20 cents, who cares?
Yeah.
It seems like it's in the weeds.
Sure. But I think there's two things. One, I think the Ethereum price, I don't actually know what it is right now, but let's say it's on the order of a quarter or something. I don't know if that's actually fair. If someone has the data, they can let me know. But
If AnswerBot didn't go offline.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it came back. I saw a note from Matt that it made
it back. What are current transaction fees on Ethereum? Thanks, AnswerBot. But regardless, my giant point that I was trying to make is I think that you either want to be radically decentralized for value and payments, which is Bitcoin, or you want to be totally centralized, which, I mean, Ethereum lost out to Solana, which then is now going to lose out to, my argument would be, Base and Tempo and all the other ones. Because again, like, I would argue that all those different projects ever achieved was regulatory confusion. I stand by that. They have achieved absolutely nothing else. Other than being like interesting test nets to test ideas. And so if you want the radical decentralization, that's Bitcoin. If you want the absolute cheapest fees to enable things like microloans, like when I took out a loan on Surge, I think I did like $10. I just wanted to try it. If I'm paying even a quarter, okay. I mean, I get like if you're doing a big loan, it doesn't matter. But you know, a lot of users are going to be self-custodial in Africa or Latin America, and like the difference between a quarter and like free, you know, that matters. Agents, they might be doing lots of little microloans. And the reason Base offers cheaper fees is because, again, it's purely decentralization theory. It owns that it's decentralization theory. Whereas I think things like Ethereum are just in this middle land that are decentralization theater, but don't recognize their decentralization theater. And they are more decentralized than Base, but like, I don't know.
All right. What are the fees on Ethereum? Thanks, AnswerBot. Matt said to try it again.
Yeah. And then, there's also just the angle that like the stable coins, you're always introducing an element of trust because the issuer is centralized.
So why not use a trusted network?
Which is why, last year, like I've said, GCoL is the answer. Google Cloud Universal Ledger, just because it's not Dino.
Exactly.
Right? It's not purporting to be decentralized like a Tempo or Base.
Yes.
It's a highly efficient data. We have a database.
We have
a compliance like feature of it.
Totally.
This is how it works.
Yeah.
And we're Google, and we're, you know, historically trusted. We're not going to rug you. And I just feel like that is, and you get all the cost efficiencies with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like, you know, again, there is a place for the radical decentralization. I do hope we get stable coins on Bitcoin, whether it's Tapered Assets or with Spark or something else. But if you're going to go centralized and use these centralized assets like Tether, then like, okay, use a centralized chain. And I want to read out a comment from Vinny from earlier, because I think, DK, this got a little bit to your question about like the issuing tokens. His comment is, the core problem with tokenization is that legal protections almost always have requirements that the cryptography doesn't fulfill. I think my issue with all of these other networks is not that they're centralized or decentralized. It's like, it's whether through a mistake or dishonesty, and I think there are different camps, you're calling it something that it's not. Like, if you're going to issue something with legal requirements and the cryptography doesn't fulfill that, great. Then let's be honest and call it a security and have it on a centralized ledger. If you're going to use,
the cryptography does enforce what the cryptography enforces. The cryptography was never designed to enforce that you actually build a real revenue generating business. That's the issue.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
the cryptography can't guarantee you that you're even going to work after you have liquidity.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those projects were insinuating that you had a claim on future cash flows, which the cryptography does not, you know, point towards. Now, a lot of them also were claiming just to be money, and if you're going to compete with money, with Bitcoin on money, okay, then you're competing, you're going to lose, but that's fine.
Money is part of the regulatory avoidance, right?
But this is my point. I don't see a single thing in crypto that has not been, other than Bitcoin, regulatory confusion, and I stand by that. And like,
I agree with that.
I stand open to examples, but you know, I don't believe there are.
So when we said there's a World Cup game going on during the show,
what's the score?
Nick likes to say Canada was playing. So I'm surprised Matt's even paying attention to this live stream. But they just scored to tie it 1-1.
Oh,
nice. With at the 78-minute mark.
Nice. And I also think, DK, Vinny came back and said the problem is in the business protection of property. Like, if the network is actually centralized and they take the, whatever, they shut it down or do a rollback and change your property rights, then you're dependent on legal requirements, not cryptography.
Securities are dependent on legal enforcement and not cryptography. And we haven't found a way to make securities dependent on cryptography alone because messy humans, real world, stuff like that.
But maybe in the world of agentic commerce, maybe that gets things become more legible and easier, right? So that's where I'm kind of like excited to see things going is like, just as one simple example, you could imagine like, okay, anytime someone zaps to like play this song, you just like have it structurally, okay, the cash flows like this. You know, it gets like a prism split to all the users.
I mean, I like your Kickstarter idea even better, which is like you can have a piece of software developed and people contribute to that and then they earn cash flow on any revenue that software generated according to some sort of programmatic structure. Like something like that feels the closest to reality. I don't think we're really there yet, but it feels like the closest to something that I could imagine being useful as a way to reinvent equity.
Yeah, I agree. And since I know we're already over time, we didn't get to talk about it, but I do, Salud, just want to mention the one of the coolest, I mean, it kind of gets into this world as well. Nostr examples that I didn't mention earlier is Groove, which is very cool to see. People are joking it's the new Napster, but Napstr. And, you know, folks are basically uploading their music catalogs and you're able to listen. Zaps aren't there yet, but they will be, but it's all completely decentralized. It's using the Insight paradigm. So there's no like, you know, there's no company to take down. There's no server to take down. There's no DNS to take down, lookup to take down. And so, you know, for better or for worse, a lot of these things are always going to kind of emerge in these like murky areas. A company certainly couldn't do this, but it's pretty cool. And like you're seeing, you know, you also have Nostr VPN where people are, you know, using, instead of using Tailscale, where you have a centralized coordinator to hook people up, it's just decentralized happening on effectively message boards. Anyways, I think my broader point is more things like the future of autonomous agents, the future of real equity and cash flows. We finally are getting decentralized infrastructure that can support that stuff. It's not the social media, but it's like the more lasting legacy.
Great. Should we call it?
Yeah.
On that note.
Good episode, guys.
All right. A lot of good stuff. Bye-bye. Until next time.